Hello, you are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This program is intended solely for the use of blind, visually impaired, and print disabled individuals. Thank you for joining us for Northern Colorado High Plains News. Up first from the Akron News Reporter. State Ag Department has funds for soil health projects. Applications due at CDA by September 15th. By Colorado Department of Agriculture Vertical Bar published, August 13, 2021 at 8:44 a.m., updated, August 13, 2021 at 8:45 a.m. The Colorado Department of Agriculture is now accepting applications to distribute Colorado Comeback Stimulus Funds to conservation districts and other eligible entities. The funding comes from Senate Bill 21-235, which appropriated $2 million to the Colorado Department of Agriculture to administer voluntary soil health programs. By statute, $1 million of those funds will go directly to conservation districts. Applications are open until September 15, 2021. Cindy Lair, the State Conservation Board Program Manager at Colorado Department of Agriculture, said the soil health program began as a grassroots effort. "Now we get to send conservation dollars directly back to those who have been asking for them," Lair said. "These grants will fund projects that help Colorado's farmers and ranchers take steps to improve their soil, become more resilient, and eventually get paid for the ecosystem benefits they support. Grants will be run through CDA's STAR initiative, which stands for Saving Tomorrow's Agricultural Resources. The STAR initiative provides matching funds to farmers and ranchers who voluntarily adopt soil health practices that promote soil armor, minimize soil disturbance, and maximize plant diversity, among other soil health principles. Entities eligible to apply include conservation districts, nonprofit or cooperative organizations, tribes, grower associations, individual producers, and research institutions. CDA is seeking projects that have a positive impact on multiple people or operations, have a strategy for measuring outcomes such as water retention, carbon sequestration, or profitability, and demonstrate measurable benefits to soil health. CDA will hold two informational sessions about how the grant program can work with the conservation districts and eligible entities. The sessions will be held virtually, via Zoom, on two different days to allow for varying schedules. The presentations will be the same and both sessions will have time for questions and answers. The Soil Health Grant Info sessions will be held on Tuesday, August 17, at 3 p.m. https://o2web.zoom.a/j/3808835749. Wednesday, August 18, at 9 a.m. https://o2web.zoom.a/j/3808835749. More information about CDA soil health work, as well as applications for the grants, can be found on the STAR program website. WCNH Updates Visitor Guidelines. By Courtesy Story. August 11, 2021 at 8:46 a.m. Washington County Nursing Home Visiting Guidelines changed beginning August 2. The newest guidelines will remain in place until the CDC presents new COVID guidelines. A vaccinated elder may have visitors in their room, up to 4 guests at a time with no time limit within reason. Visits still need to be scheduled ahead of time by calling the house. Every guest over the age of 2 must wear their mask at all times, even if the guest has been vaccinated. If a visitor does not wear their mask at all times, it is state mandated that the staff escort the visitor off campus. Visitors will be taken to the elder's room by staff after being screened. Visitors must ring the call light when the visit is over so staff can walk them out. Visitors will not be allowed in common areas. Dining room, living room, restrooms, etc. Please do not bring food or drink during visits, as this would require taking off your mask. Unvaccinated elders may continue to have scheduled outdoor visits, 2 at a time, and masks required for visitors. The WCNH staff and elders thank you for your cooperation and understanding during these difficult times. Boys Golfers Already in Action. By Alicia Berry. August 11, 2021 at 8:05 a.m. Just 3 days into the 2021 season, the Akron boys golf team already saw their first action. The team traveled to Brush last Thursday, August 5, for their first tournament of the year. Sterling took the team title with a 234, followed by Frontier Academy, 249, Strasburg, 262, Stratton, 263, Resurrection Christian, 265, Ray, 282, Yuma, 297. Brush, 304, Holyoke, 310, Burlington, 323, Limon, 338, Akron, 346, Fort Morgan, 349, and Estes Park 370. Individually, senior Ty Lucero had the best performance for the Rams, shooting a 99. Freshman Tony Galindo saw his first high school competition end in a four-way tie for 38th place with a 109. Senior Riley Ortega rounded out the Rams with a 138 in 61st place. The following day, on August 6, the Rams headed to Indian Hills Golf Course in Yuma. This time, it was Frontier Academy in first place team standings with a 249, Sterling 262, Holyoke 268, Cheyenne Wells 275, Yuma 283, Resurrection Christian 284, Ray 285, Brush 293, Stratton 296, Burlington 300, Akron 327, Estes Park 342, and Fort Morgan 375. Lucero had a good day on the course, finishing in a four-way tie for 13th place with a 90. Junior Jackson Phillips scored a 112 to place in a three-way tie for 46th. Ortega and sophomore Kalen Kemp tied for 53rd place with a 125. Akron will host their own JV and varsity tournament this Friday, August 13 at the Washington County Golf Club. For live tournament results and golf standings, download the Chug Golf app or register with iWanamaker. Bill's Blessings. Backpedaling Moments. By Bill Dorenbaker. August 11, 2021 at 8 a.m. Did you ever say something wrong? I didn't mean to, well, what I meant was, That didn't come out right. What I'm trying to say is, Sound familiar? We've all been there, those panicky moments when your stomach jumps into your throat because you let a few wrong words fly out of your mouth before you even had a chance to think exactly what you were saying. And now you're stuck trying to backpedal and retract that foolish statement without causing even more damage. We have heard a lot of this from the political community over the coronavirus, you are now mandated to do this and that, what I meant really was this, we just updated that, we revised this, now we have to go back to the original. They have a lot in common with Colorado weather, just wait a short while and it will all change. In our world today, the only constant is change. Aren't you glad there is someone we can always depend on, someone that never changes, someone that never has to backpedal, someone that is always right and never wrong. His name is Jesus, and he is the same today and doing the same things as he did when he walked the earth 2021 years ago, Hebrews 13:8. So what did Jesus do when he walked the earth? Acts 10:38, AMPC, how God anointed and consecrated Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with strength and ability and power, how he went about doing good and, in particular, curing all who were harassed and oppressed by the power of the devil, for God was with him. Luke 4:18, AMPC, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the good news. He has sent me to announce release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to send forth as deliver those who are oppressed, who are downtrodden, bruised, crushed, and broken down by calamity. And the last article from the Akron News Reporter. Letter to Editor. By Courtesy Story. August 11, 2021 at 7:56 a.m. Why taller towers? And shorter. Setbacks? First of all, last week Greg Brophy, former Colorado senator and now a lobbyist for the green energy people, maybe you should be pushing your agenda in the county you live in. You have many good points, but fall short of protecting the non-participating landowners. If you want to put this in your backyard, talk to the Yuma County commissioners. All landowners have the same rights to protect their property and use it in any way they choose. I think we can all agree on this. My question is, where can the two come together to make it work for our Washington County landowners? You might not have a wind tower contract or transmission line contract, but once the door is open, we need good planning and zoning regulations to protect both sides of this issue. I would call this the Love Thy Neighbor regulations. We need to make sure people who are not participating don't encumber extra insurance and farm and ranch operating costs. We need to make sure this doesn't cost non-participating landowners in lower property values, higher insurance costs, and a loss in some cases of aerial spraying or higher cost of spraying to take care of their land. Let's not let these outside huge companies divide our great community. Let's remember our great neighbors that we have been through the rough times and the great times together side by side. Get yourself educated on the pros and cons of letting the wind energy companies be the ones that get to set the regulations for our citizens of Washington County. Talk to people in neighboring counties that have been dealing with the end result of not having regulations set to protect the non-participating landowners. This is the time for all in our county to be a good neighbor and friend and show up when the commissioners have their public meeting on this issue. Please don't think this isn't going to affect me, With the wind towers will come a lot of transmission lines to get the electricity to the front range. Yes, the front range gets it all and we get the towers and transmission lines. They are using our beautiful horizons and land to get more energy to the front range. We just need to ask ourselves, are we giving away the beauty of our county for the right reasons? Watch for the commissioner's public hearing and bring the whole family of many generations to voice or just listen to what's happening in Washington County. Thank you. Landowner. Resident. Sally Strand. And now from the Brush News Tribune. Scores on Colorado's QS tests fell significantly in 2021, but what does that mean for kids? Far fewer students participated in Colorado Measures of Academic Success tests than in a typical year. By Meg Wingerter, Wingerter at DenverPost.com, The Denver Post. Published, August 12, 2021 at 5:09 p.m., updated, August 13, 2021 at 12:47 a.m. Significantly fewer Colorado students tested as proficient in math and reading this spring than they did in the pre-COVID era, but the combination of more kids opting out of the tests and last year's unprecedented learning experience means it's difficult to tell how much ground schools may need to make up. The biggest drops in scores on this year's Colorado Measures of Academic Success tests were in math, according to results released Thursday. The percentage of students who met or exceeded expectations fell by about 5 percentage points in 4th and 6th grades, and by more than 7 percentage points in 8th grade, compared to 2019. In the previous 3 years, the largest drop was 1 percentage point. The state compares this year's students in a particular grade to those who took the test for the same grade in previous years, not to their younger selves, so the numbers can't say if specific students forgot skills or fell behind during the pandemic. The declines were more modest in the CMS reading and writing scores. The language arts proficiency rate for third graders fell about 2 percentage points, while it was down about 1 percentage point for 5th graders and nearly 4 percentage points for 7th graders. Pre-pandemic, scores in language arts had been slowly rising. What Colorado teachers, administrators, and state officials will do with the 2021 results is an open question, as is whether they can be seen as an accurate gauge of learning loss during a school year that saw many students alternating between the classroom and remote education as the virus flared. Fewer students took the tests than in a typical year, and they took it under unusual circumstances, leading some to question if the results provide any useful information. Denver Public Schools has already announced it will essentially disregard the scores. It's not surprising that math scores fell further than reading scores, said Floyd Cobb, executive director of the Colorado Department of Education's Teaching and Learning Unit. Kids can somewhat improve their reading abilities on their own, but most people don't learn new math skills unless someone teaches them, he said. In language arts, scores were in line with how students performed 3 to 5 years ago, said Joyce Sierkowski, the department's chief assessment officer. It's difficult to compare math scores over time because of changes to how the test was given in 2019, she said. If we can accelerate learning, then we can get back to our historical levels more quickly, she said. Reading and writing scores on the PSAT and SAT actually rose slightly, though math scores fell. Fewer students took the tests than in a typical year, however, so it's possible that those who chose to were more interested in college than those who didn't. Do scores tell anything useful? The numbers confirm that all students struggled, as many predicted, Sierkowski said. While the results come with many caveats, they provide a baseline for measuring how students recover over the next few years, and may be useful in deciding how to support schools as they catch students up this year, she said. What this indicates to us is that we can look at the 2021 results with confidence that students are performing at a lower level, she said. Not everyone agrees that the results give much useful information, though. Lori Shepard, a professor who studies how tests are used or misused in education, said the results aren't reliable because of low participation, and they may be used to justify counterproductive plans, like excessive drilling on material from last year. It's especially concerning if the state uses test scores to decide where to send federal stimulus money, she said. Other education researchers are working with the state on more valid ways to judge how much students learned over the past year, Shepard said. This is why we argued against going ahead with the tests, she said. In a normal year, more than 90% of students in 3rd through 8th grade take the QS tests in math and English language arts. This spring, students in the odd-numbered grades were tested on language arts, and the even-numbered grades were tested on math. Participation fell as students got older, with about 3/4 of 3rd graders taking the tests, but only 58% of 8th graders doing so. Black, Hispanic, and multiracial students were less likely to take the tests, as were students from low-income families, those with disabilities, and those learning English as a second language. Students in those demographic groups also had, on average, larger drops compared to similar students who took the tests in 2019. Students of color and those from lower-income families were more likely to have parents who were working frontline jobs and to struggle with barriers like technology access, Cobb said. If you look at the communities that were more impacted by the virus, it stands to reason that their students would be most affected, he said. The state didn't collect data about how many days schools were operating remotely, so it's not possible to tell if students who spent more time learning virtually had lower scores. The tests measure the same content they would in a normal year, so it isn't surprising that scores would be lower when classes were disrupted and some districts may have covered fewer units, Zerkowski said. It's also possible that coming back into the classroom after spending much of the year at home may have thrown off some students, she said. State Senator Rachel Zenzinger, a Democrat from Arvada, said the tests were given in an unscientific environment, and the upheaval of the last year made the results unreliable. As we cautioned in the weeks prior to the tests, there was nothing standard about these so-called standardized tests, she said in a news release. Regardless of the recent data, the bottom line is that we intend to continue working to support our schools and to provide our students with the resources they need to get the education they deserve. Where do schools go from here? Colorado Education Commissioner Katie Anne has called for accelerated learning as the new school year begins, and said federal stimulus funds would support efforts to catch kids up. If we just go back to doing what we have done before, we will not be successful, she said in a news release. It's not clear how seriously districts will take their individual results, which are expected to be released in about a month. New Denver Public Schools Superintendent Alex Marrero told the Denver Post last week that he didn't put much faith in the scores, saying the district would run its own assessments throughout the year. The results may be less informative for districts in the Denver area because fewer students there took the tests than in other parts of the state. We'll soon learn where we are, Marrero said. Jeffco Public Schools said it plans to use students' QMAS scores as one part of an entire body of evidence of what they learned last year. The district also will do its own assessments and collect feedback from parents and teachers, spokeswoman Cameron Bell said. Amy Baca Olaert, president of the Colorado Education Association, said that while the numbers don't provide a full picture of the 2020-2021 school year, they do highlight the persistent shortfalls in how the system meets the needs of students who need more support. This is a wake-up call and a continued plea for all public education stakeholders to come together to discuss and find solutions to underlying issues like the chronic underfunding of public education, the lack of mental health and social-emotional supports, and crumbling infrastructure and outdated materials, she said in a news release. The legislature ordered that the state's accountability clock be paused for a second year, meaning the tests have lower stakes than usual. Schools and districts with low test scores and graduation rates still will have to submit improvement plans, but the Colorado State Board of Education can't order them to take more drastic steps, like hiring an outside manager or converting into charters. Parents who were surprised by their children's lower scores should keep the difficult conditions of the last year in mind, and talk to their teachers about how to complete unfinished learning and move forward, Zerkowski said. To catch kids up, the best thing is to integrate some of the skills students tried to learn last year into this year's units, where they make sense, Shepard said. For example, if an upcoming unit requires that students have a solid grasp of how to add fractions, it makes sense to go back over that, while making clear why it's important both for the upcoming lessons and for understanding the world, she said. You have to help make these connections, she said. Let's do something to lift up and enrich the opportunities for the kids who've been most affected. In sports, Broncos training camp rewind, day 13, LG Dalton Risner, Air Bay Mike Boone unable to finish practice due to injuries. The Broncos wrapped up a second practice against Minnesota on Thursday. Player attendance. Did not practice, active/pup, CB Duke Dawson, knee, CB Asang Bassi, knee, and OLB Baron Browning, leg. Active roster, DT McTelvin Aguim, groin, ILB Josie Jewell, groin, CB Mac McCain 3, hamstring, WR/KR Diondi Spencer, knee, DL Marquis Spencer, ankle, DT Dion Sizer, hamstring, WR Kendall Hinton, hip, and WR Tim Patrick, groin. New injuries, Air Bay Mike Boone, quad, WR Devont Dukes, undisclosed, and LG Dalton Risner, knee. Boone pulled up without contact running down the sideline. After being examined, he was unable to walk to the locker room and needed a cart ride. Coach Vic Fangio said Risner didn't get rolled up or anything, just, happened, in the middle of the play. Nettie Moody took over for Risner. WR Cortland Sutton did not participate in team drills. Top play. During 11-on-11 work, WR KJ Hamler easily created separation against his man and QB Teddy Bridgewater let his pass enough for a 40-yard touchdown. Thumbs up. OLB Malik Reed. After doing extra post-practice work with rookie OLB Jonathan Cooper, Reed was walking to the bus when a fan got his attention. Reed walked over and flipped his cleats to the fan. OLB Von Miller. Early in both practices, Miller ran the length of the field toward the packed grandstand and did his usual hands above the head clapping routine, only this time Vikings fans yelled, "Skull!" When Miller got done with the clap, the Vikings fans applauded him. Herbie Royce Freeman. Running fourth on the depth chart throughout camp, Freeman had several nice plays during red zone work. Royce has had a good camp, Coach Vic Fangio said. Obviously, he knows what to do. He's a very smart football player. Thumbs down. QB Teddy Bridgewater's red zone work. In 7-on-7, Bridgewater was intercepted at the goal line by MLB Eric Kendricks, and on the next play, Kendricks broke up a pass thrown into traffic. Kendricks later intercepted Bridgewater in 11-on-11 when the pass was low and behind Herbie Melvin Gordon. Odds and ends. The Broncos offense ran 55 plays of 11-on-11 and 22 plays of 7-on-7. Herbie Melvin Gordon and WR's Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler tried to break up the press conference monotony after practice, and also wanted to get back to the hotel in a hurry. Therefore, all three were at the podium, Jeudy front and center, flanked by Hamler, in sunglasses, and Gordon. Gordon on Jeudy, he has a mindset right now that he wants to be the greatest to ever do it, and he comes out here every day and showcases it. Coach Vic Fangio spent practice watching the Broncos offense after calling the defensive plays on Wednesday. "Nice being over there with the boys, a little different perspective," he said. "I thought we did a good job. I thought there were a lot of good things, on Wednesday, way too many pre-snap penalties and quarterback-center exchange, problems. We improved that, Thursday. Overall, I was pleased with the work offensively." LT Garrett Bowles was available to the media for the first time since last Saturday's dust-up with OLB Bradley Chubb. "We got in a fight? No idea," Bowles said. "No, I'm just kidding. Me and Bradley are brothers, and brothers fight and brothers have great competition. I love that guy dearly. I'm glad I don't have to go against him on Sundays. He makes me the best I can be. We go at it every single day. I'm grateful for his competitiveness, I'm grateful for his mindset, and I couldn't have a better teammate." Offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur on the preseason, "We as coaches tend to think more is better in everything, but we're also going to be smart with all of our players to make sure they're ready to roll when we play the Giants, on September 12th. Part of the preseason are obviously the preseason games, which are very important in my opinion for a lot of the guys on the roster and maybe a little less important for some." CB Nate Hairston intercepted Vikings QB Jake Browning in 11-on-11. QB Drew Lock completed three consecutive passes to end his first 7-on-7 red zone drive, WR Trinity Benson, Herbie Royce Freeman and Tay Albert Okoigbunam. Bridgewater's second drive was a throwaway and three consecutive completions, two touchdowns. 11-on-11 from the Vikings 15-yard line, Bridgewater went completion to Tay Noah Fant, aborted play, interception and pass to Gordon. Lock threw passes to Herbie Levante Bellamy and Tay Eric Saubert. To wrap up practice, Lock had a move the ball drive, run play, incompletion, run play, pass to Jeudy and incomplete to Jeudy. And from the Burlington Record. First human West Nile virus case confirmed in Larimer County. By Katie O'Donnell, Larimer County Department of Health, for the Trail Gazette. August 13, 2021 at 12:33 p.m. this week, the Larimer County Department of Health and Environment, LCAA, confirmed the first case of West Nile virus in a Larimer County resident in 2021. The case is a birthed resident. Human case reports usually peak in August and September. Mosquito numbers are abundant in many areas of the county. It is a good time to remind people to protect themselves from West Nile virus by taking steps to avoid being bitten. That can easily be done by using an effective repellent or staying indoors when mosquitoes are most active, between dusk and dawn. Trapping mosquitoes to monitor for West Nile virus risk began in June in Larimer County. West Nile disease is a viral infection which is spread to people by bites from infected Culex mosquitoes. Symptoms can range from none at all to severe illness. About 75% of people who are infected don't have any symptoms. About 25% will develop West Nile fever, which may progress to severe neuroinvasive infection. This may lead to hospitalization, critical illness, chronic disability, or even death. LCAA works with local cities and towns, a mosquito abatement company, Vector Disease Control International, and Colorado State University to monitor and assess the risk to Larimer County residents. West Nile virus can be prevented. In addition to community efforts, such as larviciding, reducing water where mosquitoes can breed, and spraying for adult mosquitoes, individuals can remember to use the 4 Ds to help prevent West Nile virus disease. Defend, use an EPA-registered mosquito repellent that has been proven to be effective against West Nile virus-carrying mosquitoes. DEET, Picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, and IR3535 are good choices. Dusk to dawn, avoid exposure during peak Culex mosquito feeding times, from dusk through dawn. Dress, wear long sleeves and pants to keep mosquitoes from biting. Drain, remove standing water in your yard or garden to minimize mosquito breeding areas. For more tips on what you can do to prevent West Nile virus, visit larimer.org/West Nile. Number of Colorado teens being vaccinated rises as school year approaches. With Delta variant spreading, Children's Hospital Colorado reports we're seeing sicker kids. By Jessica Seaman, jseaman at denverpost.com, The Denver Post. August 13, 2021 at 5:28 a.m. The number of Colorado teens getting vaccinated against the coronavirus increased steadily over the past month, which Governor Jared Polis said earlier this week helped the state reach the milestone of nearly 71% of eligible residents having received at least one shot. The rise in vaccinations is a positive development as the Delta variant is driving an increase in COVID-19 infections statewide, just as school is about to start. Cases are also increasing among children and teens across the U.S. amid the new surge of illnesses. It's trickling back up, and what we're seeing sicker kids, said Jared Milton, chief clinical officer with Children's Hospital Colorado. Physicians are also seeing more cases of other respiratory viruses, including respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. In some cases, children are testing positive for more than one virus, including COVID-19, he said. About 15% of the patients arriving in Children's Hospital Colorado's emergency department have respiratory symptoms. COVID-19 infections among children began increasing in the U.S. in July. There were about 72,000 COVID-19 cases among American children in the week ending July 29, which was up from 39,000 cases reported the previous week, according to a report by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Immunizations among Colorado teens also began rising each week over the last month. During the week of July 4, 5, 092 doses were administered to those between the ages of 12 and 17. That rose to 7,934 doses the week of July 25, according to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Statewide, 50% of teens between the ages of 12 and 17, 224,076, have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Of that age group, 41.6%, or 185,982 people, are fully immunized, according to the State Health Department. Children under 12 are not yet eligible for COVID-19 vaccines. The approaching school year likely helped motivate more parents to take their children to get vaccinated, Milton said. Local public health officials have encouraged teens to get fully vaccinated before school starts, saying it will likely help them stay in-person learning amid COVID-19 outbreaks. And lastly, great summer for Old Town. By Rick Mock, or Moshe at prairiemountainmedia.com. August 12, 2021 at 9:35 a.m. The optimism heading into the summer of 2021 has blossomed into full-scale success for Old Town and its director Nikki Wall. As with many places, particularly entertainment venues, COVID-19 wreaked havoc in 2020. Though it is still out there, especially the Delta variant, thanks to vaccines the world is opening up again, which means folks are going out for fun times. In a recent report to the Burlington City Council, Wall noted that Old Town's average visitors per day is not only significantly above the 2020 daily count, but also well above the 2019 figures. As a result, the gunfights and can-can dancer shows have been doubled. Whereas there were shows at noon each Saturday, now a second show has been added at 2 p.m. Wall noted that audiences for the shows have been standing room only. We were seeing very large crowds and groups that were missing the shows because they arrived later in the day. So to provide a better customer experience, we added a 2 p.m. show every Saturday through the end of our season on Sept 4, Wall commented. The Old Town Gunfighters were also hired to perform in the fan zone at the 80th Pikes Peak or Bust Rodeo in Colorado Springs July 14 to 17. With Old Town's success and the reopening of the carousel on the other side of town, that means other businesses in town benefit as well, Wall noted. We are so pleased to see increased tourist visitation to our community, People are out traveling and choosing to stop in Burlington to take in our attractions. They are eating here, getting gas, and that has real economic impact, she stated. Wall has also booked a musical act for the upcoming Pioneer Days on August 21. They are Mickey and the Motorcars, whose style of music is alternative country, Americana, Texas country, roots rock and country rock. Their hits include Long Road to Nowhere, Hold This Town Together, and many more. Their music is awesome, Wall exclaimed. Pioneer Days tickets are available to purchase at Old Town for $20 for an all-day pass and the concert. Also, preliminary planning has begun for Winter Wonder Lights. Wall noted that the event, which will run for 10 days, will have even more lights this year. And that is the end of my show today. Thank you for joining us for the Northern Colorado High Plains News. We invite you to please stay tuned for our next program.